Welcome to Endless 08, a time loop anime podcast. I'm BJ.
And I'm Duffo.
It is 2008. We are watching and discussing anime from 2008, the year that it is.
And what a good year it is.
It's such a good year. I was on the phone with my dad the other day, which, you know, having a conversation as usual. And I mentioned that it's such a great year. He managed to get another house loan. It's amazing. Like, he's already got, he's got his first house that we're still paying off. And then about 2 years ago, managed to get another house loan that we can rent that one out. And then just the other day, he went and was able to get a third one, despite having the first two. It's crazy. It's like they're giving away like candy.
Yeah. A big bump up from you living in a shed. You must
Very much. Yeah, yeah. It's nice. The economy's in such a great position. I'm looking forward to seeing where this year goes.
Yes, 2008, the year of the house loan.
Yes.
People are calling it now.
Yeah, the year of the housing market, like, bumping up. It's a great time.
And it will never go down. These are some of the great insights and more you can get into your brain if you start watching anime that focuses on economics and the economy, right?
Yeah, I was really not expecting this to go so deep into it, but yeah, it's Spice and Wolf.
It's a narrow market because if they add too many of them, you would get actually financially literate anime audiences in such a huge degree that they would basically then disrupt global economies.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Don't want to give too much power to the weebs. That's just asking for problems.
We watched a Spice and Wolf.
Yeah.
This time around, 2008 show.
Yeah, this is one that you specifically have been telling me to watch since 2008. Like, legitimately, I think every couple of years you'll just go, oh, Spice and Wolf. Yeah, you still need to watch that. And I was like, yeah, I haven't watched it. But I'm glad I did.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have been spending some time talking about shit that no one has looked at or discussed in years. And now we are coming to something that is pretty much in the opposite ballpark. You start doing research on this and people have done like 2-hour video essays on YouTube that have like hundreds of thousands of views on them.
Like,
we will contribute nothing new today.
No, of course not. Never. I get it, but also I don't know that this was, maybe it was for the time, but like watching it now, I'm like, this doesn't feel that groundbreaking, but I feel like that might be a confluence of two factors. A, the fact that we're coming at this, but spoilers, it's not actually 2008. So coming at this from such a long time after, and anime has had so much time to develop since then, but also just the fact that we've been in the slog of shit for the last couple of weeks, and I'm just sitting here like, oh, this is actually good. Whoa, okay, my tastes have been completely and utterly shattered.
Yeah, we've burned your taste buds off of your tongue, and now you are free to enjoy. And boy, does this thing have texture.
Ooh, yes. The mouthfeel.
Mm. Yeah. The other thing I found getting into research around all of this, some of the SEO has been somewhat disrupted by remake talk.
Yes.
If someone were to remake this in 2024, it would probably get a lot of attention.
Very much so. Honestly, if they were to remake this in any year, I would imagine it would get a lot of attention. Mm. I hadn't watched this at the time, and like now that I have, I understand the impact that it must have had. But I get the impression that it had such an impact that even if a year later they'd said, "Hey, we're going to make it again," people had been like, "Yeah, okay, cool." There's no need to, obviously, but yeah, cool. That sounds fun.
Let me tell you about this thing. It is based on a 2006 light novel.
Ooh.
The author is Isuna Hasakura.
Actually, you know what? That does make some sense. Like, if you'd told me that it was based on a manga, I would have gone, God, that must have been the most boring manga in the world. Because there's so much of this that is just dialogue explaining different economic concepts, different concepts about bartering and trading. And at one point, I read the Ghost in the Shell manga. Quite an early one, quite an interesting manga. But one thing that the author of that one definitely has an issue with is conciseness. There's lots and lots and lots of panels that are just full-on blocks of text that just explain
speech bubble territory.
Not even like speech stuff, but just explaining like, oh, this is a political concept of the time, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, what? We don't need all of this background. You could just have somebody say, oh my god, it's that, and we'll just run with it. But like, I could imagine that manga again. I enjoyed that manga, but damn, it got dense at times. And I was like, I'm just going to put that down for a minute and I'm just going to go and watch something over there that's visual. Because I'm here for images, not necessarily for walls of text.
Yes, and it goes down a lot easier with dialogue when it is spoken.
Very much.
So, 2006 light novel. It gets picked up by Imagine Studios. This is where things get a little weird. Imagine is I-M-A-G-I-N.
Okay.
This is a studio that didn't do a lot before this. They had like a couple small shows that never really made it outside Japan. And this is the last anime they ever do.
Oh, dear.
Before they exit the industry entirely.
Really? at least they went out in a high, I guess. Cool.
Yeah, everything they did after this is through their A1C imprint, which exclusively makes hentai OVAs.
Oh, of course. Of course.
So they... I don't know how they managed to produce this and completely fumble off the back of it. Like, there was a season two for this. Was not made by this studio. It was passed over because it followed the director for this, Takeo Takahashi.
Ah, okay. Okay.
To this new thing. And for the remake, it has followed him again.
Hey, cool. Awesome. Awesome.
Where he's chief director on the most recent one of it.
So, yeah, the remake is coming 2024, 2025?
It will be out by the time this airs.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I sent you a message the other day saying that we should... I enjoyed this a lot, spoilers.
Yeah.
We should definitely, when that finishes airing... just do a special episode of this comparing the two.
Yes.
And be completely unoriginal because everyone else is also going to do that. But fuck it, why not?
last thing on production notes. I managed to find a pretty good interview with Isuna Hasakura.
Ooh.
It is a translated interview on the Anime Man's YouTube page. And he talks about his influences when he was doing this.
Okay.
This is a man who was reading a lot of like medieval... texts at the time, like,
yep.
Medievalists writing about this period in history.
Right. Yep. Okay. Cool.
And he talks about like a specific one called Golden Spices. And he said that this medieval textbook pretty much inspired what I was doing. And Spice and Wolf is kind of named for Golden Spices.
Okay. Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The name itself, I'm going to be frank, not a good name. It just doesn't really mean anything, if I'm honest.
Well, it doesn't, but I think it is memorable enough that it sticks. And
definitely memorable, and there is a moment in the show when they have a bit of a faux title drop, and I had the nice moment of like, oh, it's the title! Oh, cool! Yeah.
Yeah. Other thing he points out as an inspiration is he was saying he was reading a manga at the time called Sakuran, which was about...
I know that name.
An Edo period courtesan.
Yep.
And he was saying, specifically, this was my influence for the way that Holo talks and the way that I wrote her dialogue. Because all of the characters in that spoke like Edo ladies.
Yes! Oh, my God. So, one of my main notes on this is just the writing in this is phenomenal. And specifically, just, it's so interesting to see... It feels almost Shakespearean. Like, it's not. But, you know, there's lots of metaphor. There's lots of allegory, and there's lots of that, like, musing on, like, broader concepts and generalizations to make a point to the person in front of you. Like, you're not talking about them directly, but you're talking about this kind of person does this and hinting that you're that kind of person, which is why I'm telling you this. And it's just, it's so refreshing. It's so different. It was really nice.
Yeah, Holo is not a character who feels the need to spell things out to anyone. In fact, she is often doing the opposite, where she's like, if you're not smart enough to follow with me, then that's a you problem.
Big mood. I love it.
Cool. Do you want to tell us what this show is about?
Yeah, so the story follows our two main characters, the man Lawrence, who is a traveling merchant, a trader. He travels around the country, buying these goods, taking the next spot, selling them, buying some different goods, trying to make a profit every time. And he goes to one of his, it's not his hometown, I don't think, but like...
No, just a town he regularly trades with.
Yeah, like a town he's very familiar with, and they've got a tradition of praying to a wolf god to give them a bountiful wheat harvest every year. And that wolf god is actually Holo. This god is not a random ethereal thing, whatever. This is an actual god that's just like hanging out in the woods. And the town has, over time, started to follow another god, but not, again, this doesn't appear to be an actual god somewhere. This appears to be the concept of a god that exists somewhere and that, you know, supported by a, you know, church structure, things like that. Not very good things to say about the church in this one, as far as I can tell.
Yes.
And so to escape, because of this, Hollow decides to join up with this merchant, and she attempts to return home. And her home is the lands in the north somewhere. We don't really know exactly where, but like she's going back home to the north. And so they just travel together, trying to get further north, trading while they're doing it.
Yes. It becomes clear very early. She doesn't seem as interested in getting home.
Yes.
As first stated.
Yeah.
She just wants to hang out, really.
Yep. Yep. I think that's one of the reasons why I really like her. Like, it starts off with like, yeah, we've got a goal, and then it very quickly becomes, nah, let's just vibe. Yeah. Vibing is good.
I don't even need to look at a character note reference for this. We've got Lawrence and we've got Hollow, and 90% of the show is these two characters talking to each other or talking to like a third merchant who is only relevant to the story insofar as
their function. Yeah, they talk to a dude who is the leader of a merchant of a company. That's all you need to know. He leads the company. Talk to a dude who is one of the lackeys of the company. He's a lackey. Doesn't matter. Cool. Great. Fantastic. Move on with our lives. We're focused on these two and their relationship and how it develops and how they interact with each other, which is, oh my God, so amazing. Just, I now fully understand why you wanted me to watch this for so long, because God damn, this is good.
Yeah. We'll talk about the side. There are side characters that hang around for a bit. You have Chloe in the first half and then Nora in the second half.
Yep. Yep. Chloe is the kind of the main merchant interfacer of the town, which has the wheat harvest, that whole thing. And she's been setting up deals with different people. And her main thing is that she tries to set up a deal with Lawrence, but then Lawrence is like, next time I'll come by and we'll talk about this deal. And she's like, no, I just want this shit done now. Like, I know what I'm doing. And he's like, not yet. You're still too new to this. And then tries to betray them to the church later because she's in it for profit.
Yes.
And for her town, like by extension. And yeah, not a cool person at the beginning, but then very much not a cool person.
Yes, antagonist turn.
Yeah, good stuff, good stuff. And then in our second half, we've got, you just said it?
Yeah, Nora the Shepherd. Yeah.
Got Nora the Shepherd. Great character. She's been used by the church, used and abused effectively, and she has the turn of, fuck those guys. Let's fuck them over. Let's get some revenge. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot in here. The specific medieval period they have gone for is like the decline of the Holy Roman Empire territory here. Everything is like Europe analogies. Nothing's strictly in Europe, but it's all just, you know, the same kind of thing. It is strictly like a fantasy universe, but the only magic you ever really see is...
It's one of those soft fantasy ones, like, you know, Hollow is a god who does, who, like, who can transform between like a human shape and a actual like giant wolf shape. But I mean, there's not really any other magic involved in that. It's like a transformation back and forth. Like the thing is that she exists within the final harvested wheat of the season. So that she's got to carry a pouch of the wheat around with her. But, like, again, it's not like the wheat glows or anything. It's just, like, this is a belief.
Yes.
Could actually be wrong, but, like, fuck, I'm not going to touch that just in case. I'm just going to run with it. Like, that kind of superstition stuff.
Yeah, I like that it started out with this sort of folklore mythology.
Mm.
The way it starts, like, isn't even there. It's him rolling up to a neighboring town or, like, a neighboring gatepost where there are some, like, knights of the church out there, and they're like, there's a bunch of fucking pagans out in the hill, and they're doing weird shit, and we don't like it.
But, of course, Lawrence, who knows these people, is like, yeah, yeah, I totally get you, yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to go talk to him. Bye-bye. Oh, great. Fun stuff.
Yeah. It does a very good job of setting up, like, this is going to be one of the main conflicts through the whole thing, is that the church is declining. Well, the church is growing, if anything. Hollow does say they're a lot more powerful in this region than I remember them being, but they are very anxious about the hold that they have on the place.
Yeah, it's definitely like one of those, as you said, they are definitely for sure gaining power, but also, like, the further they spread, the more tenuous their grasp is on power. Because if something spreads further and further afield, it's harder to keep a hold of everything.
Yeah, and they're trying to hold it through, you know, tariffs on certain towns and on certain goods, and make sure they control the flow of gold around the place, which becomes a major point in the second half of this season.
Yes, I was not expecting to have to keep that in mind, and then I did, and I went, oh, shit. What did they say earlier? There's a lot of details that get dropped in this, and, like, you really do need to pay attention to them because they do come back up.
Let's jump back on a personal level. Tell me how you feel about Lawrence.
I think he, too, similar to Hollow, he's also, even though he doesn't necessarily have it at the beginning, through hanging out with Hollow, his dialogue does end up also changing his writing, changes to become more of that kind of Shakespearean kind of thing. It doesn't start out like that, but I think that's just the influence of Hollow in his life, and he's like, aha, we can have a bit of banter here, and it can actually be kind of fun, and yeah, cool.
Yeah, I'm not just talking to other merchant dudes who just want to talk about the price of stuff or how much they're going to drink tonight.
They're not just constantly talking about the art of the deal. I can now talk to someone about, like, other things that aren't necessarily economics.
He's been living that LinkedIn lifestyle and has talked to a normal person for the first time, and it's
constantly,
like, holy shit,
on the grind. Yeah, I think he overall is a bit of a boring character. Not entirely. Like, at one point, there's an action scene, and he's got some moves. He can, like, he stabs someone, and he's, like, resilient enough to, like, be stabbed. It was in the arm, but, like, he's stabbed in the arm, and he, like, manages to get away and things like that. But I don't know. It feels like he is all about his business. And the kind of the point of Hollow is to try and bring him out of that a bit, which, she does, they do kind of get further afield of things, but I feel like if he's on an arc, it's kind of like we haven't risen very far in this arc. We've still got quite a ways to go, and I feel like that's probably in season two where things really start to, like, move and change.
Yeah, and it's a show that does want to take this slow a lot of the time.
Very much.
You'll watch an episode of this show, and a lot of the scenes are them on the cart, traveling somewhere, and they'll be having a conversation that isn't relevant to any overarching plot. It's just them dicking around.
Yep. As I said, there's a lot of banter in this, yep. And I love that. But, like, between the two, we've got some banter happening, and it doesn't ever get to the point of just taking pot shots at each other. Like, it flows nicely. Like, each point leads into the next point. It's nice. There is a moment early on when they have a bit of banter, and one of them oversteps the bound, and the other guy's like, "Well, fuck you. Don't say that again."
Yes, they have that argument early on where she's, like, teasing him about his past experiences with wolves. And it comes out, like, he's had comrades and business partners of his die in wolf attacks in the past.
Yep.
And it just touched a really bad nerve for him.
Yeah, and she respects that. Like, the thing that I like about this is that, like, they have that moment. It is awkward. It is like, oh, Jesus, that's not good. Oh, yikes. But then, like, they meet each other in the middle-ish and go, like, okay, cool, that was too far, my bad. They don't say that outright, obviously, but, like, they get each other very quickly, which I think is really nice.
Mm. Yeah. We'll come back to her speech pattern. You can probably speak to more of that on the Japanese language side. Again, you were the sub-watcher, I was the dub-watcher.
Yep. I'm going to be honest. I very much, like, get that you mentioned that the director was basing the creator was basing the speech patterns on those early Edo period ladies. Definitely was, because I'm going to be honest, I couldn't just kind of absent-mindedly listen to this one. There were big chunks of this where, like, they were having their dialogue, and I couldn't actually pass what they were saying, because it was that, like, it wasn't formal language, but it was like using bigger words and using those, like, those things that I just don't I don't know these phrases, and the phrasing itself wasn't in the very straightforward, like, I don't know, conversational speech patterns that I'm used to. So I couldn't just, like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna, like, watch this thing over here while I'm also watching anime. I had to be watching this anime and listening and watching closely. It was like difficult, but definitely, like, on theme, on brand. Shout out to whoever subbed this, because they did a phenomenal job.
Yes. Even trying to, you know, get a copy of this, there's arguments between different fan subbing groups about the different translations that are coming through. This is not, like, there is not a clean translation that everyone loves of this.
No, I'm positive that that is the case. Like, I could not my Japanese not good enough for me to be able to tell you which one would be a good one or not. I could not have an opinion on that. All I know is that it was very clearly complex language, like in that kind of Shakespearean thing where like you can kind of get what they're talking about, but not in great detail if you don't know it well enough, if you haven't studied it well enough. And it was just, it was interesting. It was nice. It was fun to listen to.
Yeah. On the dub side, Brina Palencia does a good job here. I'd send you at least a clip of it.
Yes.
Where her take on this, because you can't do a one-to-one in a way that makes sense on this.
No, for sure not.
So instead, she has gone for a haughty aristocrat.
Which is... So you sent me this one and it did not sway me to liking a dub, really. Like, I don't really like dubs very much. But the reason I didn't really like it was for a very specific reason. Her acting was phenomenal, great, perfect fit for the role. The translations were really nice. I like it.
She's got a very faint half-British accent that she's putting on as part of it, too.
It's nice and fun. It's really good. My issue is that, and I feel like this happens with pretty much all anime, the fact that you have to dub over the top of whatever animation has already been done often means that you have stilted moments of dialogue. And it happened in that clip. She had like the moment where she was kind of getting into the main point and getting really into, like, not intense with it, but like, you know, laying it on him for a bit. Then there was a pause that was just too long, followed by a line that was just clipped slightly too short and said slightly too quickly because the only animation they had available, like, in that was what they had to use. And it just... I just can't get over it. It's just a barrier that I can't jump over effectively enough.
Yeah, I think Funimation's work on this was a little sloppier than usual.
Right, okay.
I did notice that as well. I was reading a DVD review of this that said the exact same thing. Yep. Like, they're not cutting it quite as well. And I wonder how much of that is just because this is a no-name studio.
Yep.
And it is a work that they're not really expecting a big international fan base for.
Yes, probably. That's probably got a fair bit to do with it, for sure.
Although it did get a big international fan base. I thought it was very funny in the interview before I mentioned that he was saying that he reads international reviews of his, and there was one there from a sheep farmer from New Zealand who was like, this guy fucking gets it. This is the best depiction of sheep farming I've ever seen in anything.
That's amazing. Oh my God, I love it. Oh, beautiful. Speaking of voice actors, in Japanese, I didn't even mention the voice actors, really, but the voice actor for Hollow, phenomenal. I didn't write her name down, and just bad journalism here. But she is also the voice actor of Matoi Ryuko from Kill la Kill.
Yeah, right, of course.
Fantastic. I didn't even pick it up while I was watching, but like I felt something there. And the reason for that is that two completely different characters, like in this Hollow is being like, as you were mentioning, that kind of like slightly snide, you know, self-assuredness, things like that, whereas Matoi is just mad constantly.
Ami Koshimizu.
That's her. That's her. And also Lawrence was played by the guy who played Lelouch from Code Geass. So that'll be a fun one to look forward to.
Yes, I believe part of one of the big selling points for the remake is that they have snagged the exact same voice actors for it again.
Fantastic. I think, honestly, the voice acting team is part of what makes this what it is. So if they hadn't managed that, oof, yeah, for sure, we would have had a very different product.
Yeah. So the first half of this, a lot of the actual economic stuff that we are getting into revolves around coinage
and currency manipulation and minting of coins at different purities.
Yes. This is definitely one of these things where you're like, oh yeah, this guy was doing his research on this.
He was. And oh my God, going into this, I knew this was about economics. Like you've told me that. And I'm like, but how, like, that doesn't make sense as a concept. With like looking at the thing, we've got a wolf girl and just a dude in a cart. That does not sound, it really does get hardcore into the economics. I can remember the coins they use were the silver trenny coins and the gold La Fiori coins.
It was an L word, definitely.
Yeah, it has a G in it, I think, somewhere. But like, there was a moment in the middle where you could have like, where Lawrence tests Hollow on the different kinds of coins, and honestly, you could have tested me, and I would have got about half of them right.
Yeah, the like silver trennies. Yeah, I know what this is.
Yeah.
But anytime he mentions it, you're like, yeah, those are the good ones.
For a moment, they're going to go downhill soon, so good, man. But yeah, I was honestly not expecting such an involved currency scheme.
Yeah, because the way they explain it is in these like medieval towns from all of these different kingdoms, they all had their different trade currencies that they used and preferred to use in different towns. And depending on where you are and how strong the kingdom is at that particular point, how good their influence is going to depend how much people will accept it when they're buying and selling.
Yes.
Or trading, because often a lot of the times he will sell his goods for an agreed amount of money, but then not take the money and immediately cash the money into more goods.
Yeah, it'll be like, okay, cool. So I will sell you these, I think they sell wolf pelts at one point. I'm making up the numbers because I don't remember them, but it was like, I'll sell these wolf pelts for like the total for like 200 silver trenny. But actually, I don't want that silver trenny. I would like 200 silver trenny worth of armor. That you've got here, armor is the second half, whatever, it's a thing. Yeah. Like of that particular commodity. And they were like, okay, sure, yep, that would be this many like pieces of whatever. And he'd go, yeah, cool, sounds good, thank you.
How did you like Holo's first negotiation scene? Where one of the fun traits they give her is that she loves eating food and drinking and spending wasted. A lot of his money. And he's like, trying to make money here, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I pay it back, it's fine. She rocks up to this first negotiation he does and lifts the price by like fucking 60-70%.
Something ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I do like it because it kind of adds that mystique of, is she kind of magical? Because like the way she does it is she eats some fruit like while they're traveling, and she throws all like some apples, and she throws all the apple cores into the back of the cart, and they land on the wolf pelts. And that, of course, like having done that, the scent of the apples starts to kind of seep into the wolf pelts a bit. It won't last for long, but it's there for a bit.
Martin pelts.
That's it. Yep. Oh yeah, it wouldn't be wolf pelts. She's yeah. But in these Martin pelts, they smell like apples, and so they're about to settle on a deal, and she pipes up and goes, "Oh, but hang on a minute. Have you not noticed the smell of these pelts?"
Just makes up this total cock and bull story about them gorging themselves on fruits and making the strongest, healthiest martens with the most amazing fur that you will only see once in your generation.
Yeah, complete and utter bullshit. And this makes the guy freak out and go, "Oh my God, I guess I better give you a bucket load of money for these pelts." And I like it because, you know, like, if any other person had done that, I don't think it would have worked. But Holo did it and it worked like a charm. And I'm wondering, like, is that part of that kind of, she's a god. Is this, you know, she's not a god of economics and business or whatever, but like, you know, is there some influence of that kind that, you know, we're not seeing really? It's cool. It's interesting. Not very believable, but cool.
There's definitely a lot going on here where a lot of people find her charming because she's attractive and she is funny, but it's also strange to interact with her because a lot of the merchants are boys' clubs and they're not used to having a woman around.
And she uses a lot of big words that they don't necessarily understand. It is very, very fun to watch her interact with anyone, because she is written so differently, and in that Edo period Shakespearean way that like people don't expect it, and they're like, oh my god, yeah, okay, I don't know what you said, but okay, yeah, cool.
I like, she knows when to play dumb though as well.
For sure.
There's a very good scene where they're testing out the different coins because they've gotten this tip off that one of the coins is going to decrease in silver purity, and that's going to cause an overwide crash. And you want to have a bunch of those coins so that you can sell those directly to the kingdom that owns it so that they can do a remelt down and a remint. And because it will make so many more coins because of the reduced purity, yeah, you'll actually like make money. It's fucking, I guess this is, yeah, the Japanese thing about FX trading ties nicely into these ideas around reminting of medieval currencies.
Yes. It's a very like macroeconomics kind of thing that I'm going to be honest, I didn't fully follow while we were doing it. Like the show goes to like, frankly, required lengths to repeatedly go back over these concepts to re-explain them and update them as the situation changes, which I needed because I was like, why do I want more of this currency that's about to be worth? It's not making. And then, towards the end, they re-explain what, the recontextualization of everything and what's happening. And I can't remember it now, but, in the moment, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, this does make sense. This is a good scheme. We were getting fucked over, but now we're not. Because we're doing this instead and we're coming out on top. Fantastic.
Yeah. And this scene I was specifically leading to where they go to the coin trader and valuer and she's like holding up the coins next to her ear because he's got all the ones from different years and she's like shaking them. And he's like, lady, you're not going to be able to tell her by that. And she's like, oh, you're totally right. I'm such a stupid woman and I can't tell.
She played that guy like a fiddle. It was so fun. One thing I want to bring up, one of Hollow's powers, being like a wolf goddess kind of thing, is that she can transform into a giant wolf creature. What do you think of this creature? Describe it to me.
It's a big wolf. Big wolf. Tell you.
Yep. Yeah. Is it scary? Is it pretty? Is it what is it? How would you describe this?
Big wolf. I'm sorry. No, it looks exactly like the little wolves they have, but they just made it big.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't pass as like a monster per se or like a yokai. The size and scale of it is that it is about, I guess, bus sized.
Yep.
He rides on its back.
Yes.
At one point towards the end. Yeah. Because it sets up this. The way that the arcs in this work is that there is a scheme, they get over their heads in the scheme, and then they're being hunted down and someone's trying to kill them, and then she has to go wolf mode.
It's interesting that there are only two arcs in this. It was honestly very strange. Considering all the other anime we've watched so far, there's been arcs of like 3 episodes or 4 episodes or like... We've just watched another one that was like episodic, but you know, like the arcs are variable or usually like 3 or 4 episodes at a time. This one goes for a full on like, oh no, episodes like 1 to 6 are an entire arc and 7 to 13 are an entire arc. It's just the two. Like they're extended, as you said, the show has quite a slow pace. And so like, instead of going into all these smaller things, I was about to say lounging, that's the wrong word. We're basking in these stories. We're really taking them in.
Yeah, there were a couple moments where I felt it might have been a little too slow for me.
Yep, I agree.
Specifically, the episode where they first meet Nora, the shepherd,
mm-hmm.
and she guides them in their cart because she's like, oh, I'm a shepherd, I know how to keep wolves away.
And nothing happens on this trip.
No, he just makes small talk with her. And it's not particularly interesting small talk.
No, not particularly.
And Holo just sits there with her hood over her head and doesn't say anything because she's seething.
Yep. I think that would have been helped a bit if we'd had a moment of... Because the reason that they work together at that moment is because the shepherd is hopefully going to guide them through and protect them from wolves if the wolves happen to attack. I would have liked to have had at least a moment of tension where they're like, oh, is there some wolves nearby? Yeah, there's some wolves nearby. Just like the dog howl or something, and then like, okay, we're all good. We can relax now. The wolves have moved on. But there wasn't even that. There wasn't this next time it happens, but not like in this initial one. So they hired her for no reason.
Well,
it becomes a reason later on.
It's relationship building.
Yeah.
And that's one of the themes that the show always wants to get into is the idea of doing transactions that are favorable for the other person, but in a way that builds trust.
Yes, constantly. Lawrence keeps going to different like trading like companies and groups that he has worked with before, and they're going, cool, I would love to keep our relationship continuing. And they go, yes, we've had a fantastic relationship, I'm looking forward to working with you again in the future for both of our benefit kind of thing. And it's interesting. And then
with most of the merchant houses, it ends up with them turning around and saying, actually, in this instance, we have to fuck you, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There was, a good line in the first arc where he's talking to the head of them because Holo has been kidnapped by the Earl Arendott's people.
Yep.
Earl Arendott is the guy who brought the agricultural practices to the first town that they went to, which is why Holo got booted out of there.
Yep.
And he's also the guy who's running this scheme around the tranny coins.
Yep.
And they kidnap her, and he goes to the head of the merchants that they've been conspiring with on their side. And the guy says to him, "We have to consider between a very, very profitable business enterprise for us or a grudge from a man we see once every 3 years." It's like, damn, fuck, okay.
Yeah, not pulling any punches. Okay. It's fun. I don't want to say it becomes a predictable arc, because there's only the two arcs. You can't really say, like, because they're both somewhat different. Like, yes, they get stuffed over by the people in the end or whatever, but it's in very different ways. I think it's pretty well executed overall. As you said, it's a bit slow at moments, but, you know, like, I don't know if you kept up with it, but I have fully kept up with Sorso no Frieren, and if there was anything I was going to compare this show to, it would be that, just the pacing, the writing, the atmosphere. God damn, we need to talk about the music in this.
Oh, yeah.
The music is phenomenal.
If you like jaunty recorder tunes, this is your
Not
show.
Just that, but there's like a choral moment. There like three or four women are singing a cappella song together, and it's just, it's magical. It's perfectly in line with the tone of the show, and it's killer music.
Yeah, they do completely commit to it being like a medieval Renaissance style music for the entirety of the show,
and it works.
Yeah, absolutely.
100% works. So much fun. But very much compare this favorably to Sorso no Frieren. It's like, watch that and then watch this, or watch them in whatever order you want. I think you're going to get watching a bit of one of them will tell you, inform whether or not you will keep watching this and whether watching the other one is good for you, because they've both got that chill out, slow pacing. We're just going to take things one step at a time, see where it goes.
Yeah, it's interesting to say that, because the other strong commonality between those is that Frieren is about a many hundreds of year old elf.
Yes.
And Holo herself is hundreds and hundreds of years old.
You know, I'm just realizing this is just me and my thing for like girls or women who are actually many years older than they look.
Yes.
That's that thing coming back again. Yeah, I didn't realize. Damn it. One thing that is definitely super awkward at the beginning of this show is that Holo is naked for the first like two or three episodes. And the show just treats this as totally fine and normal. Lawrence just kind of treats this as totally fine and normal for most of it. And I'm just like, really, dude? Really? I don't know.
He's like, he's stressed about it at first. But once he's like, okay, you're a god thing and you are very strange, I think it just kind of clocks into, yeah, all right, why wouldn't this happen?
I get that she doesn't care, because, again, she's a god. She's a wolf god. She spent her entire life naked and doesn't really matter. So what's, like, changing the form? What does that matter? What difference does it make? But, yeah, I don't know. His reaction was a bit, like, I don't know. It felt a bit skeevy.
Yeah. I think it's somewhat preferable, too. I think another approach you could have to this is, like, him always being, like, constantly awkward and blushing about
actually,
it.
Actually, yeah,
and,
having like, said that, having said that, one of the things that I like about this show is that any character reactions are always tempered. There's never any, like, "Wah! Oh my god!" kind of thing. It's always, like, there's moments when he realizes that he's been completely fucked over and bamboozled in his deal that he made when he thought he was made a, you know, look at that snappy business decision, but it turns out he was completely wrong and it's all fucked. And it wasn't just, his reaction wasn't just to scream and fight, like, he had despair, and it felt fairly believable. But yeah, it's tempered reactions, nice and realistic.
Yeah, because in the second half of this, what you're referring to here is that he trades all of his pepper for a bunch of arms and armor, and then as soon as he gets to the next tent, he finds out there's been a total collapse. I didn't mention this in the dub, at least, but I do remember from reading some of the light novel that this was actually the church is doing like a crusade up north.
Oh.
And the crusade up north actually ended. And now there's just actually way too much in the way of like shields and swords
right.
that are in the market, because no one's fucking doing anything with them.
I think that was very lightly mentioned in the Japanese dub. But I didn't really clock it, to be honest. It was just one of the so many other things to focus on. That was one of the lines I was like, it doesn't matter, whatever. The armor's bad. We don't want armor anymore. That's fine. I get that.
Yeah, yeah. A cart's full of garbage. And actually, because you bought it on credit at this last place, they have transferred a debt to the guild merchants at this place, and you owe them like 72 gold coins, which you have to cough up in 48 hours. Fuck you.
Yeah, and so he starts running around to all of his connections in town, and they're all just like, get the fuck out of here. Go away. And oof, awful sexist attitudes of the time. At one point, he goes to a dude and he's like, hey, cool, just any money you've got, I would love to have it. And the guy just goes, what the fuck is wrong with you? Traipsing around with some woman through the town. I'm like, I'm sorry? What? How do you know this is not his wife or something? Like,
well, in the dub, I guess they must have changed it to say, you're trying to tell us you're all broke, but you've apparently got money to like keep a woman on the side.
Yeah, it's very similar in the Japanese dub, and I'm like, excuse me, what a fucking assumption to make. Just assuming that Lawrence, our dude, couldn't land a nice girl. To be fair, probably couldn't to begin with. Actually, no, I can't say that because he was getting in close with Chloe and she was pretty down for it. And she doesn't look terrible, so I guess. Okay.
Yeah, wins over Nora as well.
Does, yeah. And that did worry me that we were going to... I wouldn't have taken
this business deal if it were anyone but you.
it does worry me that we're slightly getting into the kind of harem-y thing of like, everyone just loves this guy because he's amazing. And I'm like, he's not that amazing though, is he? I like their relationship, like, and their banter, but honestly, it's mostly just because Hollow's in it. Like, Lawrence could be anyone else, really, that as long as they can keep up with her, I'm fine with. Yeah.
Yeah, the plot that they get her involved with is gold smuggling.
Because there's a thing of the movement of gold in the area is heavily policed because gold that has been blessed by the church is worth a bucket load more than just raw gold. So because of that, the church really needs to keep a tight lid on, the blessings that they give and then keep track of just the gold itself. That's really how they're going to maintain power in this region. And so in order to make the 74 gold Lumiere coins back...
Lumieres, that was them.
Was it there? I can't even remember. That was just a guess. I was wondering, is that the candle dude from... the Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah, it is also that. But it is the gold, like, really nice currency you use when you're buying expensive stuff.
Yep. So he comes up with this scheme that they are going to smuggle some gold from one town to the next so that it can then get blessed. And then, they've got a nice scheme going there. But they do need to have a way to smuggle it. And the way to smuggle it is to hide it, quote, in the stomachs of her sheep.
Yeah, I didn't see it go in or out at any point.
No, are we simply just kind of sewing pouches of gold under the bellies of the sheep, like into their wool? Or are we actually making these sheep ingest this gold? Because...
Oh, yeah, I assumed it was going to be a shit it out type deal.
Yeah, but how are you going to make them eat it in the first place? Like, sheep eat grass, not fucking dirt. But as they're going through and getting the gold, they get stuffed over by the company they're working with, trying to pay, like, who they're working with them because they're trying to pay off the debt to them. And of course they get fucked over because that's the way the show works. And as part of that, before they get fucked over, wolves start attacking them in the forest. So Hollow has to turn into a wolf form and go on, she doesn't turn into a wolf form. She just has to go off and try and, keep the wolves away. I need some clarification. Part of the reason that the wolves were surrounding them and she had to go and deal with them was that it wasn't just regular wolves, it was wolves with a big wolf with them. They didn't necessarily say that it was a god necessarily, but like it was a big wolf.
This dude was also hollow sized, yeah.
Yeah. She mentioned that she had to go away and deal with it, and in dealing with it, she was like, I could fight them, but instead I decided to do it diplomatically. Did she have sex with the big wolf?
But no. That was not my fucking reading of it at all.
What's the reading of it that I'm meant to take away from this? What did she do to get the wolves away? Because she mentioned, she didn't say explicitly what it was, but she mentioned that she had to do something and, Lawrence went to, ask about it and she went, don't fucking talk about it. I'm not. And
I'm like, sorry.
Okay. She was so mad about it. And so it felt embarrassed. And I'm like, did she fuck the big wolf?
Your read of this was some kind of a porno plot where it's like, oh, my husband's debts, I'll pay them off with my body. Is that what you-
Something like that, like passage through the forest safely requires distracting them with some, yeah.
My read on it is that she was embarrassed by the whole situation because of a wolf hierarchy clearly stating that, you know, she is the older, stronger, more superior one. And in a normal wolf interaction, it would have been her duty to, like, bite this guy's throat out for even threatening her.
Right.
And so, the fact that she didn't do that and didn't step up and do that display of violence and instead conceded.
So, she just deferred to him instead. Deferred and that deferring him. Was embarrassing.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes some more sense. I don't know. I do like the image in my mind that the big wolf's fucked. But, you know, okay. We can go with that.
Giving me a hard time for bringing up NTR on this fucking podcast. You bring this shit in here.
Anyway, she comes back and finds Lawrence, and Lawrence has actually just been fucked up by some other members of the company they're working with. They came along to try and help him out, and then they were like, actually, die instead.
Yeah, they just tied his hands behind his back and then pushed him over in a puddle. And went, none of us actually like killing people, so we're just going to let the wolves do it.
You're not very good foot soldiers, to be honest. No, like, I can see why this company is going under. We've got guys who just can't commit.
Yes. And look, it does tell you that this company is on the brink.
Yes.
They have problems with the rallying their troops at the moment.
Part of the reason that Hollow and Lawrence managed to get this scheme off the ground to pay them back in this way is that when they're in the meeting and Lawrence brings up the scheme, Hollow just goes, yo, I got good hearing. I just heard a guy leave. Oh, I just heard another one leave. Dude, you're fucked. You need us. And the guy goes, oh my God. Like, oh, great stuff.
I can hear all your homies are downstairs and they're all talking shit about you.
And so Hollow comes by, saves Lawrence, and then she transforms into a big wolf self to carry Lawrence and take him off to go and so they can both go and fight the soldiers of this evil company and save, what's her name?
Nora,
that's her name. I keep forgetting. And they do, but it turns out that the gold that they've been transferring was apparently, supposedly, 300 gold pieces worth.
It was going to be like 600 pieces they were talking about.
By the end. I think they said like 300 in the bag, and then by blessing it at the end, it would have been 600 worth. But actually, it was only like not even 100 gold pieces worth.
Yeah, because the company didn't even have that much money to invest into.
No, yeah. They were always going to fuck them over.
So instead, Lawrence breaks into this guy's house at the end, ties him up, and forces him to write out a bond payable to his company.
Yeah, wild. It is wild that they just brushed right through that bit when I'm like, that feels like the most difficult thing here.
Yeah, why is he tied to that chair? Like,
yeah, we just cut to the scene of Lawrence talking to the dude, and the dude's got his hands tied behind his back, and it's like, hang on a minute. When did you were just outside of the town? How did you even get back into this town? Like, there's a tariff for getting crazy. But it works out in the end. They give a bunch of gold to Nora so she can like go and become a seamstress or whatever it was. Seamstress is in sewer, not hooker. And she also gets to fuck over the church who have been fucking her over. I think that was an interesting one to get into. Like the reason that she joins along with this, A, because Lawrence has come up with the plan and she likes Lawrence now, but B, because she works as a shepherd for the church, but the church keeps sending her to dangerous places to like wander the sheep.
And
she hasn't been hurt yet because she's got a very effective dog with her, but because she keeps going to these dangerous places and coming back fine, everyone around her is going, oh, she's like a witch or something. She's using magic to stay away, like get rid of the wolves, and that's a bad thing because we're with the church. Mm. And so the church is just isolating her and fucking her.
You know, if we keep sending her on suicide runs, it's lucrative if she succeeds at it, and if she doesn't succeed at it, fuck her.
Yeah, we don't have to deal with her anymore. Easy. Fantastic. So, yeah, she decides, yeah, fuck them. Let's get some revenge. Which, yay, cool. Get revenge against the church. I like it.
Yeah. I'm glad that Aholo did finally, like, talk to Nora towards the end of the show.
It is completely ridiculous, honestly, that in, as you mentioned, in the first bit where we meet Nora, Hollow says nothing to her whatsoever. And then when they come back around and meet Nora later, they're just kind of chatting as if it's normal. And I'm like, you just spent a whole 2 days traveling with her and she said nothing to you. You're not still weirded out by that? I would be, for sure. I'd be like, this bitch doesn't like me at all. I guess I don't like her now.
Yeah, the whole first trip, because she's pissy at, you know, Lawrence, you know, chatting up this other girl instead of talking to her and just ignoring her. I'm like, wow, Holo is not passing the fucking Bechdel test.
Not at all.
I have not seen her talk to another woman this entire thing.
There's a fantastic line when Lawrence goes to her and is like, hey, I want to do this. He explains it somewhat well. He's like, I want to see if having a shepherd around is a good, like, business decision to, like, you know, get rid of wolves and stuff. And he makes sure to stress, like, you are good with wolves. I know I'm safe with you, but I want to see what she can do. And, you know, because I'm not necessarily always going to be traveling with you, you know, gotta think about the future. She's still pissy, obviously, but she makes the line, human males like to have as many females as possible, it seems.
And yes,
like, damn, what a cutting line. I love it. Ooh.
Oh, and she's giving him shit later when she's talking to Nora about the dog, and the dog has been paying a bunch of attention to her, which we'll later find out is because it knows that she's a wolf. But it's like, oh no, your dog's fallen in love with me. And it's like, it's because he feels too secure with your affection, and now he's looking around.
You need to be a bit more impersonal with him at times, just to keep him on his toes. And I'm like, ooh, I like it. Ooh, yes.
Yeah, you can see Lawrence on the side going, no, she's not talking about the fucking dog, is she? Yeah, yeah, she makes a lot of interesting gendered comments. I did catch that during this.
Very much so. Very much so.
Because she's, you know, likes giving Lawrence a hard time. And a lot of the times, it's, you know, she's going, oh, men are so easily led astray by this or that. Or,
yep, yep. It's like, that's, again, that scene in Frio when she's like, men just only need this one thing and it's the bottle of, like, potion that makes people's clothes dissolve or whatever. like Hollow would make that joke.
Yeah, but it's then just, like, the interesting playoff that, you know, she's... it's, you know, obviously a personal superiority thing, but, like, she's not bothering to interact with any other women.
Yes, no, for sure. I would say that it is definitely a failing of the show, for sure. And, like, the only women she doesn't, like, she interacts with Chloe, but Chloe is trying to rat her out as a magical, as a demon to the church.
Yeah.
Like, nah, dog, not a good time there. Like, yeah. And
then she starts giving Lawrence shit about that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun dynamic.
He's like, you now have a history of being fooled by dangerous women, you fucking idiot.
Ah, oh, beautiful. I really wanted these two to just kiss. They don't.
Yeah, yes. The relationship that they have built up between them, I would say it gets flirty like two or three episodes in.
Yeah, very much. It's flirty from that moment.
They are sharing an in-room together. They have separate beds. Unless she climbs into his bed, which happens on occasion.
Which does happen on occasion. Any of those moments when it, like, there was one moment where she, like, she climbs into his bed and pretends to, like, you know, make a move on him to actually let him know that there's actually dudes outside the door that are about to break in and we need to jump out the window. So, like, let's make a little scene of this and then, yeah. And in that moment, I was hooked right in. I was like, oh my God, is it going to happen? Oh my God. It doesn't. It was an exciting action scene, but then I was also like, oh, but. I really wanted them to get together. Having said that, the kind of denial of this, the consummation, I was about to say the denial of the consummation of this relationship, but that makes it too weird. Like the denial of the formalization of this relationship did lead to a fantastic gag at the very end where she wants him to say that he loves her in like a genuine way. And so he waits right for the clock bells to start striking and he says it. She can't hear it. Beautiful.
Yes. This is a point in Lawrence's favor. Like once he like catches that, like, you know, she's getting a little impatient with him not properly making a move on her. Instead of like giving it and making the move, he starts like taking this opportunity, like, oh, Hollow always gives me shit. I can start giving her shit.
Like, there was a moment in the big battle between, like, the Hollow and the soldier dudes. It gets to the moment where Nora, with her dog Enek, is standing there with the dude that they've been traveling with, who has the gold, and Hollow is there in a wolf form, like, about to attack, and Lawrence is like, oh my god, no, and he starts running, and he, like, calls one of the girls' names. I don't remember what he called,
yeah.
But Hollow particularly calls back to this in the final episode, in the final moments, and goes, in that moment, whose name did you call? I couldn't tell whose it was because I was, like, in the middle of the thing, but I know you called out a name. Whose was it? And he goes, oh, I called yours, of course, because your name is shorter. And it's just so much easier to say. I was like, yes. Oh, this is what I'm here for. Don't get me wrong. I want them to get together. But, oh, man, this, like, witty back and forth is just so much fun.
Yes, no, it's very good. Any other notes that you wanted to go through?
Not really. That's about it for my notes. I brought up the shape of the wolf before, because, and I feel like we could probably cut it because it doesn't really matter because...
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I didn't know where you were leading with that.
You know, I didn't like that from the very beginning he was, like, frightened by her transformation so much that he, like, basically passed out and stuff. But that's kind of covered in the subsequent episodes. When, like, in the subsequent episode, when they talk about the fact that he has a history with wolves and, like,
yeah,
you know, the reason that he's so shocked and scared by this is the fact that it's a giant wolf, not just a regular wolf. And I was, like, watching this from the beginning, I was like, this wolf is, like, it's beautiful. Like, scary for sure, but, like, I wouldn't say immediately that it's a menacing kind of wolf.
Very nice tail. She's always talking about her nice tail.
She's always talking about her tail. And, like, I was... coming into this, I was questioning, why do we have a wolf girl? This feels a bit weird. It's cute. It's cool. It works. Yeah. I like it. I've been swayed immediately.
It's so funny reading, you know, people and, like, from 2008 at the time giving this thing shit for being furry propaganda.
I mean, I'm swayed. A bit, yeah. Not gonna lie, I was watching this and I was like, I'd like to have a tail. Tail would be cool.
Yeah, they... There's like a throwaway line at the start where she talks about the fact she appears in the body of a mid-adolescent.
For and sure.
I'm like, what do you mean mid-adolescent?
I don't think that she mentioned that age range, like, specific age range in the Japanese dub. But for sure, I got this thing of, I can't tell how young or old these girls are. She does honestly look like a teenager. Not necessarily a young teenager, but not necessarily, like, 20, you know?
Yeah.
Lawrence definitely is, like, 30-something.
But noticeably older than her.
Very much. And don't get me wrong, it was a bit of a barrier for me.
Yeah, early into the show, I was going back and forth on, like, how I felt about this. And I eventually just had to go, all right, look, she does have the same build as my girlfriend, so...
I
fucking get that as well. I didn't tell you this story of the place that I used to work before my current workplace. I remember going to this work Christmas party there, and most of the people there hadn't met my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. She's in her mid-20s, yep. Right? And we go to that, and I've got a mate of mine at work who I would normally talk to, and he was there with his girlfriend as well, who I hadn't met, and he kind of avoided me for the entire work party. And I was like, okay, that's a bit odd, but I guess he's got other stuff going on.
Busy talking to other people, whatever, yeah.
And I talk to him on the Monday the next week, and I say, hey, I didn't really see much of you. I didn't get introduced to your partner. And he's like, oh, yeah, she was saying some stuff, and I thought it was just easier to keep her away from you. And I go, what do you mean? And he's like, when you walked in with your girlfriend, she made a crack about you being a pedophile and that looking like your daughter.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, holy shit.
I was incredibly fucking mad about that.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, my God.
And he's like, you know, I was trying to, like, get her to stop it, but she just kept making jokes about it. So I just didn't want to get you in earshot.
No, good dude. Good dude. Like, 100%. Yeah, good call, man. Oh, can we keep that in?
Yeah, like- we'll keep that in.
Oh, man. Does she listen to this?
No.
Oh, sorry that happened.
Yeah, thinking about that is how I came around at Hollow.
Yeah.
Like, looking at her, like, this isn't like an anime 12-year-old, right?
No, yeah.
This is not like when we were watching A Certain Magical Index, where you've got the teacher who looks younger and she actually looks like she's 10 or something.
Yes. No, this is like, and again, you can, like, I probably shouldn't say it. Like, judging, like, looking at, the shape of her body and things like that. Like, clearly this is not someone who is still developing. Like, this is somebody who is mature, both in, like, the way that their body looks generally and obviously through the way she acts.
Yeah, her attitude at all times.
Yeah. And the fact that she fucking drinks like a sailor.
Yeah, it rules. And I love any time they, like, meet, like, a tavern owner or, like, bartender, they're like, this chick rules.
Every single time.
You got an expensive girlfriend here.
They're like, you got an expensive girlfriend, but she's a keeper. And he goes, yeah, I know. Shame about the tail, though. And they all go, ah, ha, 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 ha. And then he goes, She does have a great tail, though.
Yeah. We'll finish off by talking about the opening and ending songs, because this is one of the great OPs of 2008. I really like this song.
Very much. This is a phenomenal song. Yeah. Awkward in that it does, like, the visuals focus heavily on the fact that she is naked.
Yes.
And I feel like it does just get a bit too lurid. But the song itself, phenomenal. And to be fair, like, the visuals as well, like, very clearly establish what this show is going to be about. It's clearly not an action show. We're not going to have big fight scenes and things like that. We're going to have, like, slow pace, nice music, and, like, vibes are what we're focusing on here.
Yeah, really nice song, and they've paired it with one of my least favorite ending songs.
Yep. I've come here. Yep. It's distinct. It's distinct. The visuals are nice, if not necessarily, like, in line with the show. It's like, in a chibi little style.
Chibi, like, fairy tale book, yeah, almost, is like, what they're going for.
I like the fairy tale book look. Like, that's a cool, like, kind of design choice to make. But the chibi one, not necessarily. Like, again, talking about, like, maturity and the fact that, like, you know, we've got these mature things happening. And, like, not as in, like, sex and things like that. But, like, you know, we're talking about economics. We're not talking about kids stuff. We're talking about, we're going deep on those kinds of, like, higher order thinking stuff. And then we've got these chibi childish characters.
Yeah, and it's like polka music.
Yeah, the music, again, the music is, it's a choice. They made a choice. Not necessarily a good one, but it is very distinct. Anytime it would start, I'd go like, oh yeah, this is the end of the episode.
Yep. And that weird outro card where it's like bringing in the letters at different times, but like not in a row.
Not necessarily in any specific order. Yeah.
I thought it was kind of a weird, crappy title card.
Bit of a mess. Yeah. Bit of a mess.
But again, I'll give this pass to this studio, which is, you know, sought up out of obscurity, produced this one banger,
and then
dipped, handed the show off to someone else, and went, here you go, this is your moneymaker now.
Yeah.
Back to the hentai mines.
To be fair, they probably made more money in the hentai mines than they did on this. Yes. Cheaper to make, more guaranteed income. Yeah, fun show.
Thank you for listening to Endless 08. I've been Duffo.
And I've been BJ. You can find all our stuff at endless08.com and on our social media.
If you know a real freak, tell them about the show. We'll see you next time.